Views and opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily...
The Black Talk Radio Network is made possible in part with help from the Black Talk Media Project, a North Carolina-based nonprofit engaged in the production and distribution of independent digital black media. Find out more by going to blacktalkradionetwork.com or blacktalkmediaproject.org and look for the menu tab, Crowdfunding Black Media. Black Talk Media Project, helping to provide you with new black media for the new millennium.
Opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Blacks in Business Radio. I am one of your hosts, and I am joined by my co-host, Brother Robert 11X. Are you there, Brother Robert?
Yes, ma'am. I'm here. How you doing, CC?
I am good. I'm just sitting here and just can't believe it's Thursday again already. It seems like that time just rolled around really fast. We're already at May the 3rd, 2018. We are in the lovely city, the historical city, the sometimes backward city of St. Louis. Yes. I don't know about your weather where you are, but we have had a plethora of heat and wet. Today it was very wet, and yesterday I think we had 90 degree weather, and it's just been very interesting for us entrepreneurs that are outside in the elements. Would you agree?
Most certainly. You know, this weather has been so strange over the last few years. You know, St. Louis is commonly known for not having those transitional seasons, you know, like spring and fall. We used to go on right from winter to summer, and then from summer to winter. And I mean, this is classic weather. I just put the air conditioning in the window yesterday, and I mean, it's just, and then prior to this, just a few weeks, I don't even think it was 3 weeks, a couple of weeks ago, I was wearing long johns. So it's classic.
Yeah, it definitely is. I mean, today was so muggy, I was just very uncomfortable. I mean, I was just extremely uncomfortable. I didn't know whether to roll the window down or turn the AC on, because the AC would have made me too cold, but then I couldn't breathe because it was muggy. I was like, oh my goodness, I just don't know what to do. So I just kind of waited till I got back home. And then, you know, everything was fine because I was in like a very decent AC. So I don't know, I'm good now. I don't know what tomorrow's going to be, but it looks like we are out of winter. That's what it looks like to me, which means there'll be lots of festivals going on, lots of events for, you know, entrepreneurs. I don't know how many of you are actually involved in the festivals that go on, you know, but there's lots of opportunity out there. I suggest that you go to your city's directory and find out what actually is going on. I know here in St. Louis, although the downtown doesn't offer very much, there seems to be a whole lot going on. It's always very interesting to me how that works, because St. Louis is nowhere near like Chicago or Seattle when it comes to downtown, but I guarantee you every weekend this city is packed. I mean, there is just like people everywhere. It is an Uber and Lyft driver's dream. Because you can definitely pick up a lot of customers because it's just so packed down here. And the fact that things closed down, I just don't really know where everybody's going except for the bars. And that's an opportunity. You know, I was actually talking with some guys, well, not guys, guys and girls, I should say, some people that work at a coffee shop. And they really want to open their own coffee shop. And we got to talking about how there is no coffee shop that is open downtown after hours. You know, again, the only thing that's open is bars. And so I really want to help them. I want to have a meeting with them and brainstorm how we can actually get that going. I don't really have to be a part of it like that. But since they work for a coffee shop, I think it's very good that they be interested in opening their own. I'm always very leery about people who actually kind of badmouth their boss, but they totally were going in on their boss. They didn't like it. So I know they definitely should be doing something else that's not really a good thing. So we talked a little bit, but I would really like to help them brainstorm on how to get that going because they have no idea. They're just, you know, used to getting up, going to work and everything like that. So we know that's how entrepreneurs start. But yeah, I mean, downtown, I think they're coming up. I think they're starting to do things a little bit different, but it'd be interesting to see St. Louis build more. I mean, they're building now, but it's like been a long time coming. I think they're having they're building a huge thing, the FBI building. They're building I don't even know what that is. What is an FBI build? Is that the FBI headquarters they're building here? What is that?
No, it's a spy center. That's what they call it, like some type of spy center for the government. You know, it's a huge deal, though. It's a huge deal for St. Louis, especially for the city, you know. I want to say something on what you were just saying about the guys with the coffee shop. Like a lot of other people that may want to go into business or whatever, a lot of times, you know, they really don't understand the ideal of going into business is just the whole thought of the business. The thought of the business is really going into business. If you say you want a coffee shop, then you can start off with one coffee pot.
You know what I told them? I said, we will go get 5 Keurig machines and we will line them up and we will make Keurig coffee.
And that's your start. I mean, but people got this whole ideal of when you start a business that, you know, you got to have these thousands of dollars up front. And I always go back to what Mark Cuban said about businesses that anybody that takes out a loan to start a business, Mark Cuban, you got us on Shark Tank. He said he called them a moron, which I thought that was harsh language, but his reasoning for that is, If you got a great ideal is going to do what it do on its own.
Wait, let me tell our guests. Guests, I do see you there. I see you're coming in and out of the queue, but I do see you there. Our guests is there waiting. But go ahead, keep going, Robert.
Yeah. So, what I would say to anybody is, if you want to start a business, don't let the money discourage you. 24 years ago, I started with a $70 loan from a partner of mine that I was trying to get $500 to start the business with, but he wound up sliding me back the $70 tuition for my daughter, and that's what I started my journey with. That was 24 years ago, and that was 24 years ago with no real estate, with no knowledge of business. I just knew that I didn't want to work for anybody, so I didn't have all that, you know, that extra surplus of cash. I didn't have the information available. I didn't know about trade shows. I didn't know nothing. I was fresh out of the streets. And that was enough for me. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I know. I can relate because I started my childcare with my children's toys. I just got the best toys out, got a nice box, and got some nap mats. And, you know, I already had 4 children, and that's a lot. So, you know, I was able to take on more children. But I mean, people get so overrun and overwrought with what they don't have. I always say your best days are when you can really focus on using what you have. I mean, and it's a beautiful thing because you will start repurposing things. It's like, okay, well, this is a Kleenex box, but now, shoot, it's a soap holder or it's a key holder. You know, you can just totally repurpose things. And, you know, it allows you to be creative when you use what you have. And that actually kind of goes into our subject today, you know, being creative, using what you have, and actually being in a thrift store. Our guest for the first hour, she's actually the manager of a thrift store. Her name is Miss Jant Staton, and she's the manager of a local thrift store here in St. Louis, Missouri, and it's called Revive. And they say, we want to break the cycle of poverty for today's youth and beyond school programming and expanding learning opportunities that is embedded in the local school through a four-part approach, intensive individualized academic instruction, social emotional coaching, community engagement, and enrichment opportunities beyond school is getting youth back on track toward graduating high school. So I thought that it'd be interesting to have Jance on. And I mean, I see her as a budding entrepreneur too, because she's got also her links on here. She's on Facebook, Instagram, and she's probably on Twitter too. But yeah, she has some things for social media that we definitely can take a look at. So Scotty, maybe you can, if you have the clip available, can you play it before we bring her on? Okay. Let's hold off on that one. But what we'll do is we will bring her on and then we'll introduce a clip later on. Okay. Welcome to Blacks in Business Radio. Who do we have with us today? Oh.
Hello.
Hello. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. Is this Jance?
Yes, this is Jance.
Okay, Jance. Thank you for joining Robert and myself. We have Robert here with us.
Hi, Robert.
Hey, how are you?
Great. How are you?
Okay. Always great.
Well, I was super duper impressed by the store because it kind of reminded me of Refresh, and that's funny, Refresh and Revive, you know, that they kind of, you know, sound the same. And yeah. We know that Refresh actually supports the foster and adoptive care system. So tell us about Revive, and I think Revive actually stems from another program. Tell us about this program.
Yes, so Revive is a thrift shop. We're located in South City, St. Louis. We're actually owned by a local nonprofit organization called Mission St. Louis. So within Mission St. Louis, they have various programs. They specifically have a program called Beyond Jobs. There is Beyond Schools and Beyond Charity. And each one of those programs focuses on supporting people in our community in various ways. They help with job and leadership training. They help with students who are not reaching their grade levels and their reading levels and things of that like that. And they also provide different charity or put on different charity programs throughout the year that support people in our community. And so Revive, we specifically benefit their Beyond Jobs initiative, which provides job training to men who have either lived in poverty or they have been in and out of prison throughout their life. And so they provide job training to those guys, and they get an internship through the program. And if they do well in the internship, then they get a job out of it at the end of it.
Okay, that's very interesting. Now, I have to ask this question. Now, what is the mother program of Revive?
Mission St. Louis.
Okay, Mission St. Louis. Now, do you know how Mission St. Louis is actually funded? Do we know if it's backed by any people that support prison slave labor or anything? I mean, I know that's like a weird question, but I think a lot of times we get excited about different programs, but then we find out that they're actually supported by these organizations and groups and big money people that actually support prison slave labor. And again, it sounds funny because, well, not funny, but it sounds weird because They're supposed to be supporting people who are getting out of prison or need help from prison. Do you know if any of that is fact?
No. So Mission St. Louis was actually started and founded by a man who was friends with a guy in his neighborhood who had had issues finding a job because of his past background, being imprisoned and things of that nature. And so he wanted to find a way to help his friend enter the workforce. And so the idea of Mission St. Louis kind of sprawled out of that. So it is not backed by any of the programs that you mentioned. All of their funding comes from donations from people in the community, and then our shop, we serve as a social enterprise to the program, so we also fund the programs as well.
Oh, okay, that is wonderful. That's very good to know, because it's like we get so excited about programs, then we find out something crazy, and they're like, "Oh my goodness, we thought we had some hope." Well, I mean, I personally really I appreciate what you just gave as far as information, because it also couples the atmosphere of the store, you know, because you may go into a Goodwill or one of these other run-of-the-mill stores, and we know what the thrift store stereotype is, but your store, or your store that you manage, definitely emulates a high-end boutique, you know. You walk in and you don't feel dirty, or like, oh goodness, I don't want to touch this, or oh, where's my hand sanitizer?
Right.
Not strange smells, you know. Right. I mean, I enjoy those thrift stores too, because there's gems in there. But I mean, your store, you walk in, and I kid you not, every time I come to that store, it gets better and better. I mean, I've been several times, but when I come in there, things have been changed around. You've added some things. You know, it's the old and the new. You have some brand new, and then you have some used items. And you can tell that the people that work there truly care about the atmosphere. I don't know who does all the decorating, but it's not something where you would even think, okay, well, these people are supporting, you know, anything.
Right.
I mean, you just think that it's somebody's store. It is totally a nice store. So tell us about that. Like, what is your background in handling this type of atmosphere or this type of store?
So my background, I've worked in retail for the last 11 years. I started at more of your bigger corporations and things like that. So I've worked for Dillard's and Forever 21. I've worked for Saks Fifth Avenue, Michael Kors, and things like that. So I come from a traditional, you know, mall setting and things of that nature. I was actually at work at the mall when I was approached by a man who worked with Mission St. Louis, and he told me that they were looking for a manager for the thrift store. And at the time, I was like, a thrift store? Like, I was thinking, like you were saying, you know, thrift store, and things are, you know, disorganized, and I'm going to have to dig. And I was like, no, that's not me at all. But just like you were saying, you know, I walked into Revive for the first time, and it looked totally different than what it looks like today. But still, it was beautiful. It was, you know, well-organized, and everything was clean, and you know, it just gave you a really different feel than what your typical thrift store is. And then so once I learned more about Mission St. Louis and the programs that they supported or that they put on, and then the way that Revive was associated with Mission St. Louis and the work that they were doing in the community, that made it even, you know, more of a made it an easier decision for me to move from a corporate entity into a small business and a nonprofit organization.
Right. Well, I mean, it just, so they fished you out of the mall, basically.
Yeah, they fished me out.
Wow. Well, that is definitely a success story. So someone must have really appreciated the type of customer service that you were providing.
Yes, I guess so. The customer service is definitely my favorite part of working in retail, building those relationships with people, and being in a setting like Revive opened even more doors to connect with people in the connect with people in the community. You know, working in a mall, you see thousands of different people all day, every day, and you might not necessarily remember anybody's name because you see so many people, or, you know, they're just there to pick up one item. They're not there to see you, and you didn't come to work to see them. But working in a place like Revive, I see a lot of the same faces, and people become, you know, like your family. They're not just customers. They're people who are there because they support you and they support the shop and they support the work that we're doing in the community. And it's just a really great, great experience for, I think, myself and the customers as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know firsthand that you do a terrific and tremendous job. And as the manager, how would you go about training one to continue on that vibe of great customer service? Because we know that when you interview people, you come across all kinds of people, all different walks of life. And some people just naturally have it. They just naturally have that great personality to interact with the customers. But then some of them are a little bit rough around the edges and then they don't get it. But then some can't be trained. How do you pick those people out?
So I have a very, what I like to think, a unique approach to interviewing people at Revive. So in my previous positions as a retail manager, you know, I would take somebody back into the office and I would ask them this long list of questions and like behavioral questions just to, you know, get a feel of the type of worker they are. But at Revive, I literally take people behind the counter out on the floor where everything is happening and I talk to them there. And I just have a very normal conversation with them. I get to know them as a person, what they like, what they don't like, what they've done, what they don't want to do, or what they want to do with their lives. And I really like to let them see what it's like to work there. And I want them to see, you know, the customers coming in and how we interact with the customers and really get a feel for what they're walking into. Because a lot of people, just like myself, they come from a traditional retail background and, you know, we're handed a manual that tells us exactly how we're supposed to handle every situation or, you know, where everything's supposed to go and how everything is supposed to look and how we're supposed to approach the customer in order to make a sale. But at Revive, it's totally different. We're 100% relying on us building relationships with people and making them want to come back to us, not because they want to spend their money there, but because they support the work that we're doing in the community. And so we want them to feel like they're working or that they're shopping with normal people who are interested in their lives and their backgrounds and things like that, and not necessarily just trying to take the money from their pocket. So I always try to let them see exactly what it is that they're going to get themselves into if they are offered a job, so that they aren't completely taken off guard and they walk into something that's totally different than what they thought it was going to be.
Wow. Well, that is a beautiful thing. I mean, so basically you do like an on-the-job training situation where they get to see, they get to see and interact with not just the customers, but the atmosphere and the all-around situation. And that gives you the opportunity to even make them comfortable, because I think, you know, a lot of times, even though people may have worked in retail, if I worked in retail, but I'm used to working in the stock room or something like that, I may be kind of shy and just really freeze up when I talk to customers. But the type of atmosphere that you provide as a manager definitely helps a person to be a little bit more versatile in how they interact with not just other employees, but also the customers. So I think that that is a very, very good thing. Tell us about a tough situation you've had on the job dealing with an employee.
At Revive or just in general?
In general. We wouldn't want you to do that, just in general.
I have had my fair share of tough situations. I would say probably the toughest situations are getting people to care as much as you do. You know, there are so many or have been so many instances where, you know, somebody calls off from work or they're an hour late or things of that nature. So I would say probably my toughest situations are a very good example is I had a girl a few months ago who we had hired, and she completely basically fell off the face of the earth for 3 days. And she was supposed to be at work, and and no one could get in contact with her. She didn't contact us. And we were just completely lost. And then 3 days later, she completely she contacts us and completely just overlooks the situation. It was no big deal to her. And, you know,
she came back into work like nothing was wrong.
Yes, she came back into work like nothing was wrong. And you know, I pride myself on being a compassionate person and understanding, but you know, you in any work setting, you can't just disappear for 3 days and expect to still have a job at the end of it, especially if you didn't communicate what was going on. So, again, like at Revive, we are very much so people-based, and we care about the people that shop there just as much as we care about the people that work for us. And so just the mere fact that she didn't let us know what was going on in her life, or that she wasn't going to be able to make it to work, or, you know, just communicating with us, let us know that she didn't care, you know, about us as much as we cared about her. We cared enough to reach out to see, you know, if she was okay and things of that nature, and we got nothing until she showed up 3 days later.
Right. Well, you know, with that situation, and we're gonna segue into you in a little while, because I definitely see you as an entrepreneur after looking at your social media. I would think, you know, there are people that are just plain, you know, irresponsible. I get that.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's like, sometimes it could be a mental problem, and you wonder, mm-hmm. okay, does this person have a mental problem? But then I don't know how you approach that if a person has not disclosed the mental problem to you.
Right.
Like, what would you do with that situation? Would you say, hey, you got to go? Or do you say, do you have some issues that you haven't told us about? I mean, what do you do with that situation? Like you said, you try to be compassionate for the worker, but at the same time, if they're not giving you the relevant information needed to make appropriate moves for their benefit, what mm-hmm. do you do?
Right. Yeah, I just, you know, I try to talk to people on a eye-to-eye level. I don't want anybody to feel like, you know, I'm coming down on them hard, or that I'm pushing or anything like that. I just, you know, try to talk to them on a human level, you know, let them know I just like you, I have things going on in my life that cause me to not want to come to work, but I still come.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have my fair share of troubles, and as a manager, it's my job to care about the customers just as much as I care about my team. So I try to let them know that, you know, I care. I care, and that, you know, I'm here to listen if you want to talk, or if there's something going on. Like, I'm here for that reason. And then at that point, it's up to them to either open up about it or choose not to. And I mean, if you don't open up about it, then I don't know. I can't accommodate you in any way if you don't tell me what's going on, and I can't be understanding if you're not telling me what the issue is, or if there is an issue. So then it comes down to me having to be a responsible manager and saying, you know, mm-hmm. It's my job to take care of this establishment and to make sure that we're fully staffed and that we have enough staff here to assist our customers and things like that. So if they're not capable of sharing what's going on in their life, then I have to take the next step and let them know what's going on in the store and what I need to occur. And 9 times out of 10, if I don't know what's going on, then we're going to have to let you go. And that's just what it's going to have to be.
Yeah, that sounds very, very compassionate and loving. I mean, I'm like, oh, no, you're gone. You didn't show up. No, you got to go. Sorry. Goodbye. No, I totally understand. That's great. Wow. Well, I had another question, but what I would like to do is you're going to segue into your platform, but are there volunteer opportunities at Revive?
Yes, there are always volunteer opportunities at Revive. You can actually visit our website, revivethrift.org, and there is a tab in the menu that says Get Involved. And there is an application there that you can fill out to say that you are interested in volunteering. Or you can call us at the store, too, and I can, or myself or whomever is working at the time, can give you more information about volunteering.
Okay, and we're not ending, but just let them know what phone number to call you at.
Sure. The phone number is 314-776-7520.
Okay, perfect. Now, Robert, you're there. I had to kind of quiet you a little bit. There's a lot of noises, but did you have some questions here for Jance?
Well, I actually have just a few positive comments, because one of the things about being in customer service, off the top of my head, which she said it very correct, is you have to care. You have to be a caring person in order to have the people come back and want to, you know, see you again. And it's not just about spending the money. It's when you're an entrepreneur or when you're in management, it should be you care about the people, genuinely care about the people. And that's a very powerful thing. And I so appreciate hearing that coming from you, sister. I really do. Yeah. I love entrepreneurship, and customer service is the one thing that I will not come back to your location if it's bad customer service. I'm out of there.
Yes.
So, that's huge. You made me connect the dot just when you said that. You really have to care.
Yes,
and it's it's an honesty. It's a genuine. It's not just an act. It's really a part of. It's really who you are. It's just really who you are, and that is the part that comes out and comes across to most of your customers. Not all of them. Most of them.
Yeah.
Definitely agree.
Well, what we need to do now is, of course, we want to talk about the platform that you have on social media. And we do have a clip here available, so we're going to play a little bit of one of your videos. Okay, Scotty, go ahead.
Hey guys, so for this video, I challenged myself to choose 7 items from my closet and style them into as many outfits as I could to wear for 7 days. So here we go.
The outfits, that is definitely true, but we will share that whole video on our Blacks in Business Facebook page so you all can actually see the wardrobe that she's styling. I don't know why I picked that particular video, but yes. So that's okay, you all. She does have a few videos, and you're going to be able to see them. And once we put that on the Facebook page, you can, of course, look at her other videos there. So tell us about you and what you're looking to do going forward in the wardrobe styling fashion business. What are your goals? Because when I look at your videos and your Instagram and Facebook, I can tell that that's where you are. And that's what makes you so great at your job also, because you know about style.
Yeah. I love fashion a lot.
Okay.
It is my passion. I love looking good, and I love helping other people to look good. So long term, I would love to offer personal styling to other people, and I would also like to get into consulting for other boutiques and things of that nature, and provide like retail tips and things of that nature to either prospective boutique owners or current boutique owners who are attempting to elevate their business. So those are my long term goals.
Okay, so when you say that, tell me, what is stopping you now from doing those things? Because I really see that in you, and I'm like, wow, she works for somebody. Oh my goodness, I just want to pull her out of the job and get her going, because, you know, there are so many people that need styling. And let me tell you right now who needs styling. Are you ready? Are you ready?
I'm ready.
The doggone people on Fox 4 News in the morning, the weather lady. Please contact them and say, I will style your people pro bono.
Yes.
Just do it pro bono so you can get your name out there, because that woman, I'm telling you, I'm every morning want to pull my hair out looking at that woman. Not just her, but I mean, it's like 3 of them. They get on TV, but I'm saying that is definitely a great way to start. Like if you make your business cards, and then you go over there and you tell them, hey, you know, I'm willing to style you for free. Use your status at Revive. And I mean, I'm telling you, that would be it. See, I'm just like ready to get you going into entrepreneurship already.
I'm ready.
you're ready. Okay, well, that's good. That's good. And then Brother Robert can talk to you about going to a trade show in Vegas. Have you been to a trade show yet?
Yes, I have. I went for the first time actually in February. I went to Vegas for Magic, which is the largest fashion trade show that happens every year.
Okay, you went to Magic. Wonderful. So how was that?
It was awesome. It was like the greatest experience ever. It was very eye-opening to me as well, and I feel like it gave me a huge push in the right direction. I was actually supposed to be there to shop for merchandise for Revive, and I actually ended up doing less shopping than I was supposed to do and way more learning than I thought I would. They had a bunch of seminars that they held, and there was just a lot of valuable information out there, and there was a lot of networking opportunities as well. And it just kind of gave me this extra validation to let me know that I was moving in the right direction and that I had way more knowledge than I thought that I had, because there were so many women there who had boutiques of their own and things of that nature but had never worked in retail a day in their lives. They just had money and were capable of opening a business, or they liked fashion but had never provided any customer service to anyone. And that was mind-blowing to me, and I was like, how could you ever be successful and you have never done any of these things? So it was a really great experience and definitely gave me an extra bit of motivation to move forward.
Yes, it tells you actually that you're ready, because you've worked in all these other places that belong to other people, and you're looking at your A and the other person's B. It's like, wait a minute, but I have A, all I need is B, and oh my goodness, if I put this A and B together, I will be on fire. But it's a big deal that you've even actually been to a trade show. Do you want to speak to that, Robert?
Well, it's a big deal that you've been to the Magic Show. I mean, that's like Mecca to Muslims.
That's
to the capital. That's a huge, world-renowned show. And I went in 2001 to my first Magic Show. And I don't know if you had this experience, because today I wouldn't know who is who in the music industry if I went there today. But when I went there, I mean, Russell Simmons and I and my partner, we talked for like 30 minutes, and it was just blowing me away, because I'm like, okay, when is he going to walk away?
But
he didn't. He just stayed there. And so I didn't quite get it until I got it. And what I got out of it was, okay, this guy has a clothing line, and he sees that I'm a store owner, so he wants to talk to me because he doesn't know how many stores I have.
Yep.
That blew me away. That was so mind-boggling to me. The networking opportunities you spoke on. It's such a huge eye opener, and for that to be your first time to go, I could almost imagine it had you on fire. It's still on fire.
Oh, yes. The fire is beneath my feet.
I definitely believe that.
Now, I got a question. Revive is a thrift store, so I'm not making the connection with them sending you to a show like Magic, because I was about to ask, have they had any shows in the trade shows in the thrift store industry that you guys have visited? But when you said that, I kind of raised my eyebrows, like, okay, what is Revive doing sending you to a trade show like Magic when they're a thrift store?
Yeah, so Revive actually carries a portion of our merchandise is used donated merchandise, and we also have a section of merchandise that is brand new that we purchased from vendors across the country. So we actually rebranded ourselves last year, and we changed our name formally to Revive Thrift and Boutique, because like we were talking about earlier, Revive, although it is named a thrift store, it doesn't look like a thrift store at all. It has more of a boutique feel. And so for a while, initially we were getting donations of brand new merchandise from various companies all over the country. And so then we started buying new merchandise to supplement categories that we weren't we were lacking donations in. So if we were if we didn't have very many dresses, then we would go buy a bunch of dresses, but we would buy some that were really cheap that we could still sell at a really cheap price. So people really started taking to that, and they would start asking us when was more new merchandise coming in, and we were like, wow, we're a thrift store, like people are coming here looking for new merchandise. So we ended up rebranding ourselves to be Revive Thrift and Boutique. And so when I got to Revive, when I first started, they actually were selling way more furniture and home goods at the time. And then when I got there, having a bigger fashion background, we started outselling furniture and home goods to fashion. And so we were doing so well in it. We had a retail consultant at the time. He told me that we should go to Los Angeles. So we flew out to the fashion district, and my manager, my boss, who is one of the advisors at Mission St. Louis, he gave me a very small budget and told me to go out and buy whatever I wanted to. And so we brought all this merchandise back, and we ended up selling so much of it in the first 2 weeks that we had in the store that we just kept buying more and more stuff. So then the opportunity to attend Magic came up at the end of last year. So I booked the tickets out to Vegas, and there I went.
The rest was history.
Yes.
Wow. Well, that is wonderful.
So you said you had what was the guy? He did what now? The retail?
He was a consultant. So he also came from a corporate retail background. And when they first opened Revive, they just had the general idea to open a thrift store, but none of them had any type of knowledge of retail or customer service or any of that. So they brought him in to provide tips and advice for running a store and things of that nature.
Well, you know, you're actually building stock in that company.
Yeah.
your stocks are going up now. Because see, what it's just like the Asians and the Arabs, they can't really profit off of us unless one of us are in those environments.
Yeah, exactly.
And a lot of the times they don't pay for the lesson. Mm-hmm. They get the lesson for free.
Mm-hmm.
But I just met a young lady a couple of weeks back, who's working in one of the wholesale spots here in St. Louis, and she's also flying out to the ASD show in Las Vegas, and they're sending her out there. And I told her, I said, that's a very rare thing for me to see these Asian people sending you, a black woman or a black person, period, to the trade show. So I know what that move is all about. So, like I expressed to her, establish relationships on a first name basis yourself.
Yeah.
And also have your business card with your business name.
Oh, yes. Oh, I did that last year. Yeah.
Good job.
Yes, because that, I mean, they know what they're doing, but you got to be a step ahead, because it's never promised to you. It's for show for them. Yeah.
Exactly.
It's for certain for them, but not for certain for you.
Exactly. And you know what I would say also to you, Jance, is if you have gathered information, which I'm sure you have, every time you put out a YouTube video or you make a newsletter for your own personal company, I would also include those contacts that you have reached out to while you were at the trade show, which keeps you relevant with those people.
Yes. Mm. I actually just started a YouTube series specifically based on providing information to other people who were lacking the resources to start their own businesses and things like that, because I noticed that there were so many so-called successful boutique owners on YouTube and things of that nature, but none of them were willing to provide resources or information to anybody else. They felt like, mm-hmm. you know, because mm-hmm. I had struggled to find this information, you got to struggle too.
Yeah, or, competition.
I have this really great merchandise in my shop, and I'm not going to tell you where I got it from, but my mentality was, you know, there are thousands of vendors out there, and, you know, which means there are thousands of styles for us to choose from. We don't all live in the same city, state, county, country,
right.
any of
right.
that. Like, there's room for all of us to have success. So I was like, okay, well, I'm just going to throw all this information out here. And I kid you not, I have a one YouTube video that has completely blown up in the last 2 weeks. I went from having 100 views one day to now just under 5,000 views in the last 2 weeks. It's completely blown up on me. And
wow.
it
Which
shows
one is that,
you that
one?
They're, it is under, what is that video called? I want to say it's called Where to Get Merchandise for Your Boutique. The mm-hmm. YouTube channel, my name on YouTube is Jan Charte. I think I have two YouTube channels. I started one while
yeah.
I was in college, and then uh-huh. I have one that I've been uploading on more recently.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to say, I think it's called Where to Get Merchandise for Your Boutique. And also, everything on that particular page is more geared towards boutiques and finding merchandise and getting a job in retail and things of that nature.
Wait, how do you spell Charte? Charte?
Charte.
Charte. Let me see if it'll come up. We definitely want to make sure that we put that on our Blacks in Business radio page. Robert, I don't know where you are. I hate to keep hearing you.
I'm on air. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you, but it's like a lot of noise.
Okay, but I'm gonna mute uh-huh. myself. That's what I've been doing. But look, so sister.
Well, no.
Yes.
Go ahead.
So there we have a Blacks in Business hashtag trade shows. If you go there, and you can find so many different links to so many different trade shows. That I post on that page right there. It's called Blacks in Business hashtag trade shows. And
okay.
Chicago is another great hub of information when it comes to the fashion industry. Chicago is ranked number 3 in the United States for fashion. So
oh wow, yeah.
You don't have to go all the way to Las Vegas, and I'm speaking
yeah.
from experience. Because I totally underrated Chicago, and when I had my clothing store and I went to Las Vegas
mm-hmm.
blew me away. But you really have to look into Chicago. It's a very huge city, and it's only 4 hours away. And
right.
I just recently found out that it was ranked number 3 in the fashion industry in the United States. So that's huge.
Yes, that
yeah,
is amazing.
Yeah, we looked that information up a couple of weeks ago. And we, you know, because that's what we do. We look up trade shows because people don't understand how important and how pertinent it is to their business to
yes.
go to trade shows. No matter what
yes.
sort of business you're in, you belong at a trade show. And
exactly.
I mean, I myself didn't understand the importance until Brother Robert, you know. And I mean, for me, it's exciting because I'm interested in all kinds of stuff. I mean, you can
yeah.
take me to the auto trade show and I'll be just as excited as the housewares trade show because
right.
you, first of all, the networking opportunity is just
yeah.
off the chain. You
never
know who you will meet. You
mm-hmm.
never know what seed you are planting and you just never know. You never know. But I mean, I know it's always something great. So,
yeah.
You know, people have to be encouraged to do that. But I really, really like the fact that you have decided, excuse that noise, I'm downtown. But yeah, I'm so excited that you've decided to share the information. And Brother Robert actually has a story about that. What is your story, Robert? The game is to be sold and not told about the tags and all.
Well, the way I found out about the magic show, I went to a local retailer. He was very well known here for years. He sold a lot of fashions in the city, and I was selling a lot of bootleg stuff, bootleg Tommy Hilfiger, but I wanted to not do that. I wanted
mm-hmm.
to, because I had my own sense of, you know, what I wanted to sell. I didn't like,
right.
I never really liked name brand. So
yeah.
I went to this guy and asked him how to get started, and he told me the game is to be sold and not to be told. And I was so ambitious, and you know, God has always been with me and been making himself very well known that he's with me. So what happened, I was cutting off the labels of some oils that I had been getting in, and while I was cutting off the labels off a box, the light bulb just went off in my head, like, ding, 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 ding. This is what you need to find out what you're trying to find out. I called my little guys up. I said, hey, man, go to this brother's store right here and all the clothing stores and cut all these labels off the boxes in their trash can. And they sure enough did that. But I specifically wanted his labels out of his trash can.
Yes.
And I called them companies up. I said, hey, I'm in the clothing business. How do I know, you know, when the new stuff is coming out?
Uh-huh.
And the guy said, I really was afraid to ask him, but I was like, man, I got to ask him. So he said, oh, well, you need to come to the magic show. I said, where and what is that?
Uh-huh.
He told me it was a show where you meet all the designers, you meet all the manufacturers. And I was like, when is it? This was in December of, I think, December of 2000. And he said it's in February of 2001.
Mm-hmm.
I was that February. And I was blown away. It just, like I said, and from that experience there, and me being, I've been a hustler all my life, you know, quote unquote, in the positive sense. But then when I learned about that trade show, I started thinking like this. Walmart has always been my target. Walmart has always been the big whale that I wanted to bring down. So in retail, I said, no, I'm not just a clothing store. I'm a general merchandise store. So everything that I use at my house is everything I need to have wholesale. Everything that I use in my life, I need to be able to get it wholesale. So they have trade shows for the petroleum industry. They have trade shows for real estate. They have trade shows for everything that you need in your life. There's a trade show for it. If you Google whatever it is that you use in your life, gas, motor oil, or whatever, there's a trade show for it. And you can get everything that you need in your life wholesale. And that's my perspective on doing business. That's how I do it. But that the trade shows is a must. You got to go.
Well, it's so funny that, like, you know, whenever we're somewhere, Robert always asks him, do you all go to the trade show? So I like do that, too. When people feel like they're above me, that's the card I pull. Like, I was at a furniture store here in St. Louis, and I thought it was a thrift furniture store, you know, because of the location. But I happened to, something said, go inside. So that's what I do. So I pulled over, I went inside, beautiful furniture. And they also offer, you know, that thing where they're getting us. I didn't even ask them for their information on how they finance, because they say they do in-house finance. So I know that's the gotcha. I know they're getting us on the interest rate. So I went in and I talked to the guy, and of course he was very impressed with me because I'm well-spoken and I didn't look like whatever the stereotype was. And you know, he was so happy to speak with me, and he offered me almost half off of the piece of furniture I was looking at. And I said, oh, and by the way, I do have a tax ID number because this is for my business. Oh, he was so impressed. You know, and he was going on, and he bought out the book, and he took me to the screen, and what? And I'm like, how many people get this treatment? You know, how many people get it? He felt like I probably was about to really spend some money with him or whatever. So then, after talking with him or whatever, I said, oh, by the way, which trade show are you guys in? He said, oh, yeah, no, we don't go to trade show. I said, oh, you don't have your furniture in a trade show? He was like, no. And it's like he shifted. He really shifted. Yeah. Like, wow, who is this? You know, what does she know about the trade show? But, you know, after that, I made a Facebook post on Facebook, and I was like, oh, you know, basically attributing that information to Brother Robert, because, I mean, he pulls that out at any time, like a card. It's like, what trade show are you going to? And so, like, I did that, you know, just yesterday, And it just changes the atmosphere, you know, no matter what they're thinking about you. But when you ask about the trade show, they know that you know something, you know. So, yeah. I mean, that's just definitely a great card to have, that information about trade shows. It's good to be relevant. It's good to go to them, go to different ones. You know, I think we're going to one in July or something. But, yeah, it's good to just be relevant. And as you're building your own business, I would say, I don't know if you've ever heard of Keisha Mabry. She's here in St. Louis.
Yes, I love her. I've met her. So we've hung out a few times.
Okay, perfect. Okay, I love Keisha too. So Keisha says is when she was still working on a job and building her business and writing her book, she got up extra early to build her brand first. Before the day started, she gave herself her best. Because if you try to go to work and then come home and give yourself something for yourself, you're just all spent out. So she says, give yourself your best in the morning. Okay, so get up early, build what you have to build, then go to your job. Don't worry about trying to do that at the end of the day. Give yourself the best in the daytime. So that's what I would say to you, because I know that you have great potential. I am so happy for you. I'm so excited about the position that you've been blessed in. I'm excited that you've been able to go to a trade show already. And I know that there are just great things to come for you in this position that you're in. And I'm just so excited that you're able to come on our program. And I would love for you to let the people know how they can find you. How would they find you if they wanted to look up your YouTube channel, and if they wanted to be styled? Are you open to doing that right now? If somebody wants to be styled, would you do that for them?
Oh, yes, of course I would. You can find me on my website, which is jancecharte.com. That's JANCECHARTAE.com. My name is Jance Charte on YouTube as well. You can email me at jance@jancecharte.com, or you can find me on Facebook with the same name.
Jance Charte, all the way. Yes. Hey.
I like that.
That's what we do here, Blacks in Business Radio.
Cute.
Well, Brother Robert, do you have any last words for Miss Jance Charte?
Yes, before you go, sister, those videos that you're doing on YouTube, download them and put them on a disc.
Okay.
And when you go to Magic the next time, have a bio. Have your own personal bio with the disc that shows your videos. And when you go around to those big companies, you meet, find out who the owner is. The owners will be you. You probably met some owners of some of them.
Yeah, I've met a few. Yeah, for sure.
So put your bio in their hand and tell them you want a subcontract. You want to do some subcontract with them. And here's my bio.
Well, another thing you could do is also just have the link ready with all your things uploaded to share. You could just text it or email it to them right away too. Because you know we're in the modern age of technology,
right.
But just have either you could do an app, but I mean you don't have to really do an app. Just have all of your channel ready to share, all of your bio just compiled in one space and be ready to share it. I mean there's probably not anybody in this industry that's not technology savvy,
right?
No, that's incorrect. You'll be shocked at how far behind they're lagging. Because when I took my tablet and I was recording on my tablet, they were like, "Oh, that's a great idea." I'm like, "Well, we should be in a paperless age." It just blew me away at how they're not in the technology business.
Yeah, they're
still
writing
on paper. So for them
I would say have everything available. Have a DVD, have your information, have your business card, have the links, have everything to share. You got to be able to speak to people's way of learning. That's what I always say. What is their modality? How do they learn? Just be able to give it to them. But what we have to do is tell you thank you, ma'am. Of course, you're welcome anytime.
You.
This you want to stay and listen to Miss LaKonya Murray, you are welcome to do so. But what we have to do is tell you thank you so much for joining us, and we look forward to working with you here in the future. And we are going to go to a commercial. You are listening to Blacks in Business Radio on BlackTalkRadioNetwork.com.
Hi, the Black Talk Media Project would like to invite you to become a member of the BTR Community subscription-based social media platform. BTR Community is a platform that was set up for the listening audience of Black Talk Radio Network, the number one independent Black radio network online. For just $24 per year, your subscription gives you access to an interactive space to share information with like-minded people with your privacy guaranteed. Your subscription will go a long way to help us maintain and improve our current media platforms. It will also help provide a budget so that we can begin the task of establishing localized media centers and radio stations across the United States. The best way to show your support and appreciation for what we do here at Black Talk Radio is to subscribe. Help us to help you be informed. Join BTRCommunity.com today.
All right, everybody. Welcome to the second hour of Blacks in Business Radio. We were just talking to the wonderful Jance Staton. We are excited to be in communication with her. I'm telling you, she is a powerful young lady. We'll be seeing more from her soon, I'm quite sure. So, Brother Robert, are you still there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, perfect. I know you enjoyed that interview, so let's move on to the next one. We are now going into the second hour where we will be talking about contract work versus employment. What is the difference between the two? And I'll tell you, we have our guest on the line, Miss LaKonya Murray, or Connie, as she chooses to be called. That's great. But I'll tell you what happened to me. And this is like the most extreme case where this has happened. But basically, I took on a contract job a few months ago, last year sometime. And the person who wanted me to come work, of course, he wanted an employee. But I immediately told him, I said, no, I want this to be contract. Well, in that, okay, you know how you're trying to just get your feet wet and get in there and do your thing, you know, you don't want to ruffle too many feathers, whatever you want to call it, you just don't want to make a big stink about things. Well, what ended up happening was this person refused to recognize me as a contract person. He wanted me to be an employee. The person that was on the premises before myself, because I have a cleaning business, she was on the premises before me, and she was probably about 56, and she was older, and she couldn't clean really fast. She was always taking sips of water and breathing and having to sit down, whereas the job took her literally 4 hours, but for me it was less than two, so it wasn't a problem for me. So what the owner started, when he saw that I was able to complete it, he started adding more tasks, which this is not what's supposed to happen. But me, I'm like, I can knock that out too. So I made sure that I did everything. All these things that he was setting out to be done, I did them. But one day, I just started feeling a little degraded because one day he handed me a pile of t-shirts and said, here, you need to cut these up. And I'm like, wait a minute. Then another time he was like, well, now can you paint my door? And another time he said, I can go get one of those squeegees and you could do our windows, you know, since you're running out of things to do. So I went ahead and got my LLC. You know, because I didn't have an LLC for my business. I wasn't even worried about that. But I said, as I move into the next level, let me go ahead and slap the LLC on there. So that's what I did. Got an LLC, opened up a different bank account. And I said, okay, so as I have paid for a status change, I need to make a status change. So that's what I did. So I had a talk with him. I said, listen, because he noticed that when I was done, I was leaving. I didn't check in with him. I've never done that. I've never reported to him this, that, and the other. Whatever. I just do what I do when I leave. So I started leaving earlier than what I had been leaving before. So one day he finally approached me. Thank you for being patient for the story. But one day he finally approached me. He said, "Oh, is something wrong?" And I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "Well, I'm looking, you know, and you've been leaving early, you know. And first of all, you're looking. What are you're looking because I'm having to write this down for you. You know, you're having me write down when I'm leaving." And I said, "Well, yes, because I finish, you know." And so then that's when he was trying to tell me that he could give me more things to do. Well, I don't need more things to do. And he was like, "Well, you know, I could be giving you more money." I told him, I said, "Listen, it's not about more money. That's not what I'm here. I'm here to do the job and be done." I said, "Just like you, I'm a business owner and I am supposed to be controlling my own time. I don't need to be here for 4 hours. It doesn't take me 4 hours to finish this." And I had to further elaborate. I said, "The person that you had here before, there's really no comparison to her work to my work. You know, I never wanted to say that, but I finally had to say that to him because this person was old. Well, not really old, but her body was old and she was unable to complete the tasks as effectively or efficiently as I was. I mean, the things that he had her doing, I knocked out in like no problem. So what he thought it was appropriate to do was to keep up with my time. He thought that I should report to him when I leave. He thought that I should be doing more and more tasks. He thought that I should just, it just was trying to turn into an employee situation completely. And so finally last week, let's see what happened. Last week I went in and I happened to go outside to my van and I went out to my van to get something in, to get some water, you know, and I was probably outside for 5 minutes, but it doesn't matter. I could be outside for 20 minutes, but I was outside for 5 minutes and I came back in and he says to me, "Is something wrong?" I said, "No, why? What do you mean?" He said, "You're finished. You're fired." I said, "Fired?" You know, because I'm like, this man totally doesn't understand this. I mean, he refuses to understand this. He thinks that he can fire me. I mean, and I saw it coming because I could feel this problem because I didn't want to report to him. So I, you know, he gave me a check and that was it. And that was it for me. And I remember that morning I had told Brother Robert, I was like, "You know what? I'm really not feeling this situation. I'm going to have to either sub this thing out to somebody else or just totally be done with it," because just the whole vibe of him feeling like he should be able to control me and control my time. Now, I could see if the work was not being done in an effective manner, if my work was incomplete, but I made sure that I checked with him the week when we had that conversation. And he said, "You know, I'm very happy with your work. It's not that. You're doing a great job. I just want to be able to pay you more money." As if money was the driving factor for me to need to stay there longer. That just wasn't the issue for me. I don't know what he thought. I mean, I don't know what he thought. But it just became a problem for him that he couldn't control my time and he wanted to be able to add more things on. It was just ridiculous. And I wouldn't even say that he didn't understand how it was supposed to work. I think that he couldn't believe that I understood how it worked. So that's the story of why we are doing this today, because I think that as employers and employees, contract work, subcontract work, whatever, you need to know the rules. Because if you are calling yourself contracting the work out, but you're really treating the person like an employee, you could be in trouble for that. You know, so that's why we have Connie on the show, and we're going to welcome her in after my long story. Welcome, Miss Connie.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm just going to let you know, LaConia is absolutely great. I was going by Connie. I've been going by Connie for years. This is off subject because people told me that I should, and no one would hire me with my name as LaConia. But I'm getting rid of my colonizer name, and we're going with LaConia. That's the name my mother named me, and people can pronounce it just fine. And I don't need anyone to hire me because I am my own boss. So.
Let me clap my hands. She said, "I don't need nobody to hire me. This is my name. I am my own boss. So you better call me LaConia because that is my name." I heard that. Okay, so wait, but, Connie, your mom never, nobody calls you that or what? I mean, you just came up with that?
Yeah, it was just something I came up with because, you know, I had different family members and different people would say, well, you know, I don't know why they named you Lakanya. When you get out of high school, when you graduate college, you know, you're not going to be able to find a job, and Lakanya is too difficult to pronounce and things of that nature, but they can pronounce all these other difficult Western names, so they can pronounce Lakanya.
Well, you know what? That is a great opener. I am so proud of you. That's wonderful. I mean, that says it all. So, Lakanya, please.
Thank you very much. Let's talk about.
Know who you are. I mean, you've been on our show before, but I want people to know that you are the business attorney. You know, I would say business bulldog, but I don't want to call you any kind of bulldog, but you are the business attorney. You know, let them know what it is that you do and what service you provide before we get into the subject matter.
Absolutely. So my name, as we said before, is Lakanya Murray. I am the founder and owner of Off the Mark IP Solutions, where we help clients throughout the United States with trademarks, copyright, and business development solutions. We really are very adamant about protecting your business and your brand, especially with identifying intellectual property, which are assets that a lot of new entrepreneurs aren't aware of, that can help your bottom line and help you have a competitive edge in your market. So we're really adamant about that. Located in Montgomery, Alabama, but like I said, I help clients throughout the United States. I'm very excited about today's subject, because as small business owners, one of the things that I like to educate my clients on are scaling their business. And one of the ways to scale your business is, of course, is not doing all the work yourself. It's by hiring help. And so when you start talking about hiring help, then people want to know, do I hire an independent contractor? Do I hire an employee? Can I hire someone and treat them like an employee, but call them a contractor so I don't have to worry about paying taxes on them? And so, I mean, like, this is a really, really great subject. And the example that you gave with your own personal situation is, I mean, that it's perfect. And I would like to say, not only is that an example of, you know, independent contractor versus employee, but it's also a matter of why contracts are important in business situations, because you actually enter into that situation with two different mindsets. He said that, hey, I want an employee, and you were like, well, no, I'm independent contractor, but y'all entered into this agreement, and when you entered into the agreement, he thought you entered into the agreement on his terms, and you thought you entered into the agreement on your terms.
Mm-hmm.
So it was really just a recipe for disaster.
Yes, and it did cook up a huge disaster, honey, because I was ready to...
Right, because he thought that you were an employee, Let's talk about instances where you would want to hire an employee. Well, let's talk about the difference between an employee and an independent contractor. One word I heard you say over and over again was control. And when it comes to the difference between independent contractor and employee, that is the essence of the difference, is control. How much control does the person have? If the person, and the IRS will tell you, that if they control how the work is done, when the work is done, if they provide the tools for you to do the work, and that is not an independent contractor. That you have an employee in that situation. So just keep that in mind. If you're telling someone when to come in, how to do the work, and providing the tools to do the work, you do not have an independent contractor. You need to talk with your accountant and get set up so that you can start doing payroll and taking out all the different IRS taxes that you have to take out, and state taxes, versus the independent contractor. With the independent contractor, you're essentially saying, hey, I need my house clean. And you say, okay. And then the person, based on their schedule, they say, I'm available on Wednesday to come in and clean your house. They come in, they bring their own tools, their own supplies, they clean the house, and you pay them, they leave. That's the difference. Now, with housework, there is, you know, they do have some household employees. So you could be an employee as a babysitter, as a caretaker, as a housekeeper. But it just depends on whether or not this is something that you're doing for them and they're controlling everything, or you're doing it for yourself. And another thing that I heard you say was that in order to cut down the confusion, you went and start and create an LLC. You don't even have to do all that. Because as a sole proprietor, you still have the right to be an independent contractor. And so that's really important. So in the instances where you want to have an employee versus an independent contractor, I've had this conversation with clients who are starting businesses and starting to scale, and they were looking for the most efficient way to do so. But sometimes the most efficient way is not the way that's going to grow your brand or your business. So if you have a brand that you're growing, and you have and as a brand, and most people, they think about brand, they think about logos, they think about names, they think about colors and things of that nature. But the real meat behind the brand is what that brand stands for. So the policies that it has, the mission that it has, how they treat people, and the culture. That's what builds a brand. So if you're bringing somebody in and you want them to abide by your brand culture, you want them to wear the brand shirt, you want them to treat and greet people a certain way, you want them to do things a certain way, you want them to use the tools that you have so that everybody is the same, you need an employee, not an independent contractor. If you have someone and you just want them to, if you just have something that you're going to outsource because it's not the doing of that, providing of that service is not brand related, then you can use an independent contractor. So an example of that is if you need a graphic designer, but you're not in the graphic design business. Okay? So if that is the case, you can outsource that and use an independent contractor versus hiring an employee to do something that is not something that you do all the time.
Right. Well, and that's why we use places like Fiverr.com.
We do use Fiverr, but the thing with Fiverr, you just want to be careful. I've heard some stories when it comes to Fiverr and copyrights and intellectual property. So you want to make sure, because a lot of times those people are overseas, and you don't really know them, or you know. And so what I've been finding lately is some of them have been infringing on other people's intellectual property.
That's true. It actually happened to me. Now, there's a lot of people that have had great success with Fiverr, but myself, I've used them a total of 3 times. The first time, the young lady was from China, and she did a great job. She created a logo for me. I mean, she was phenomenal. The second time, somebody did something wrong. I don't remember exactly what he did, but I paid, and I didn't get what I was supposed to get. The third time, same thing. The person was supposed to create a logo. He went on one of these free logo sites. He created a logo from the free logo site. Fiverr did nothing to recover anything for me and was like, well, you can't prove that he did that. I'm like, yes, I can. Here's the site right here. But they didn't do anything to recover it. So if somebody was going to use Fiverr, I think that they should probably look for somebody kind of local, you know, like in the United States at least.
Right, and it just depends on the project and how important that project is. If it's just like a flyer that for an event, maybe you can use Fiverr. But if you're using it to brand your business, to create your logo, to create your brand, your book, and your and different things like that, you might want to use, like you said, someone local, someone that you can talk to, lay eyes on, someone maybe from a referral source that you trust, so that you would know the type of person you're dealing with. Like you said, I mean, that person, and that, I mean, that's not uncommon. I can totally see someone using Fiverr, you know, paying for a gig on Fiverr and then going and using the free site to create the work. That's why when I use it, I have one person that I use, and it's for signature logos, and it's the same person that I've been going to for years, because they do good quality work, they have an amazing reputation, and I've talked to him, and not only will he give me commercial use, because that's become the standard, is commercial use, but I don't want commercial use, I want a copyright assignment, and those are two different things. And so when you're dealing with your independent contractors, and so this is on the subject, but it's a little bit off the subject, when you're dealing with your independent contractors, you want to make sure you have a contract between you and them that protects you. Because what happens is, if an independent contractor goes and infringes on someone's copyright, even though they created the work, the owner of that copyright will come to you seeking damages.
Right.
If you don't have an agreement between you and your independent contractor, then you're in trouble.
Wow. Well, you know what? This stuff gets very deep, because, you know, we just think, okay, I'll hire somebody to do this, that, and whatever. But you actually have to have things in place when you're in business, and that's why you're here. Now, I'm going to go ahead and plug Erica Parker. She is our guest host every third week here on BIB Radio. Now, she and her husband both, they do logos and all sorts of things, and they are very well versed in copyrights and doing things the correct way. They actually embed their logo into the logo of what they create for you, and they do a phenomenal job. You can check her out. Her name is online, Erica Foxy Parker. I need to look it up, but yeah, so check her out. That was just a little plug for her, but yes, absolutely, these things can get so detailed, and people just don't think about it. And you know they don't think about it because all these web things have been created where you can just simply go on and create this, or you can go on Fiverr, get these people or whatever, but you're not really thinking about these infringements that can happen. So tell the people, well, first let me tell everybody, you can press ** if you would like to unmute yourself and talk for the people that are here. You can pipe in at any time with any questions you might have, because if you don't talk, I'm going to do all the talking. But anyway, tell the people what sort of service you can provide for them in learning or navigating this contract work or logo situation. What is it you could provide for them?
So when you're in business and you're trying to decide whether or not you need an employee or an independent contractor, I would definitely recommend you schedule a brand development and protection consultation with me, and we can discuss the pros and cons of each as it relates to developing your brand. And also, once you decide which way you want to go, whether you go in employee route or independent contractor route, you need a contract for both. Mm-hmm. Both, no matter who you're working with, they both need to know what you expect from them, so you don't end up in a situation like where you were in, where you thought one thing and he thought one thing, and both of y'all were mad at the other because the other person didn't understand what was going on. That's why contracts are so important. So that's what I would recommend. You can go to my website at iprotectbrands.com and schedule and fill out the contact form, and Ashley will give you a call and schedule an appointment, which is pretty great. But like I said, so when we think about employee versus independent contractor, don't feel bad. Like, if you're finding yourself, like, you're listening to this and you're like, oh my gosh, I have an employee, not an independent contractor. Like, really, do not feel bad. Because not too long ago, I want to say it was FedEx got in a lot of trouble over independent contractor versus employee. So they actually were hiring, you know, I'm doing air quotes right now, people as independent contractors to drive their trucks.
Okay.
But they dictated, you know, what type of truck they can have, what they had to wear. I mean, they had control over everything. And finally, those people came together and they sued them. And they won because they wanted the benefits and the rights of an employee. So they were being treated like an employee. So a lot of people treat people like employees, but they want to just call them independent contractors so they don't have to take taxes out.
Right,
and
right.
In the long run, it is a problem. It's a, you know, IRS doesn't play with their money. So in the long run, you're going to end up having an IRS problem if you don't do this the right way.
Mm-hmm. Now, let me ask you this question. It sounds like just contracts need to be in place all over. What is it that is stopping people from actually putting a contract together? I mean, even on a little sliver of paper, what is stopping people from doing that? Do they feel like it won't be effective? I mean, what is it? Because I don't know a whole lot of people that are necessarily putting contracts in place, but they got a whole lot of things going on with people, and then they get screwed in the end. I mean, yeah,
they don't understand, and that's exactly, they're moving too fast. They're trusting people in business. I just had this conversation with, I think it was my daughter earlier. Business is not about trust. You know, business is business, and you want to have things in place to protect yourself. So when people are moving, they're moving too fast. They're trusting people, and they're not having And so it's not even, so they're not having contracts in place, and that also tells you that they're not having conversations.
Mm-hmm.
And the conversations are not in depth. So they're like basic conversations like, hey, you want to do this joint venture together? Sure, we're going to, let's host a workshop. Okay, great. And so then they're going to get together and they're going to host a workshop, right? But then who's going to be responsible for advertising the workshop? Who's going to be responsible for paying the vendors? What is our budget? You know, like, these are things that we never talked about. One of the things that just came to mind when I was talking was Kevin Hart. Kevin Hart did a movie a couple of years ago with Sony, was the production company behind it. Sony was mad at Kevin Hart because he wouldn't use his Instagram and his social media to promote the movie without being compensated. Well, Sony, did you discuss this? Did you ask him to do this? Was this in his contract? No, it was not. So why are you mad? Contracts really just clear the way.
So what makes a contract actually binding, though? Like, if I write something out on a paper, is it just that the two people sign it and date it? Does that bind it, or do I need a notary, or do I need blood? Like, you cut your finger, I cut mine, we put it together and put on. What is binding? What is a binding?
That's an excellent question. So, first of all, you want to make sure that you have a meeting of the mind, so that both parties are on equal footing. There's consideration, meaning that you're something for something. You know, there's an exchanging of something. And then if both of you sign it, you don't have to have a witness, but if both of you sign that agreement, then you have a contract.
Okay.
So a meeting of the minds, consideration, you know, meaning that you're in exchange for me doing this, you're given this. Bam, there you go. That's why you can do it. That's why oral contracts can be enforced. It is more difficult to enforce because you don't have that proof of what was said. That with that contract, you know what was said. This is what we talked about. This is what we agreed to. Versus the oral agreement where, you know, one person says this, one person says that. And just like the situation you were in, you had an oral agreement and he thought that it was an employee situation. You thought it was an independent contractor agreement. And at the end, you know, you both were wrong.
Right.
So so you had an oral agreement, but it was really not an understanding of what the agreement was.
Well, yeah, and you know what I'll tell you too? This is the thing. Like me, I always think I have the upper hand. You know what I'm saying? Even if I have the foresight of what could and might happen or probably will happen, you know, I always just feel like I have the upper hand in the situation. So therefore, you know, I got this, you know, but that's a very bad way to be. It's because I could be messing myself up. Like, what if I wanted to sue this man? You know, what if I did? But I don't. I mean, because I already cleared it in my heart. I'm like, this man don't understand who I am. That's always my saying. You just really don't know who I am. But I think actually he did kind of find out who I was. So that kind of like freaked them out a little bit because it's like, why is she giving me this tidbit information? Why is she giving me this attitude? And what, you know how they think. But I always think I have the upper hand in the situation, but the real true upper hand would make sure that there's an enforceable contract in place. So that's what I want to make sure that everyone knows. Whenever you're going into these business ventures, I don't care how big, how small, how meaningless, you must put a contract in place, because when you don't put it in place and things go left, you're going to kick yourself in the butt, you know? So why not have a consultation and do this?
And right, and in addition to not only that, but you also, what it does is, what if you wanted a referral? So now this man has a bad taste in his mouth for you, and instead of speaking good and sending you more business, he's not going to send you anybody. But if you guys would have had an understanding in the beginning, all that confusion would have been cut out. And now your brand and your business won't suffer because of it.
Right.
It's not just about litigation purposes. Again, it's really about making sure that both parties are on the same page. That is it. And so you ask the question, like, how do you know? So in addition to the meeting of the minds and consideration, the contract you sign and enter into is only as good as the person you enter into the contract with. I did a talk yesterday with our local chamber, and I told them it's kind of like if you get married to a serial cheater. Just because you say I'll do doesn't mean that the serial cheater is going to stop cheating. If you enter into a business relationship, even if you sign a contract with someone you know is no good. You know they're notorious for missing deadlines and for doing half-tail work and for just, you know, not having the best business ethics. Just because you sign this piece of paper does not mean all that is going to change. If you know that about that person, the best thing to do is not to sign this agreement. Because even though you can get it enforced by going to court and all that stuff, that's expensive. And why go through all of that?
And that's a headache. Who wants to do that? It's like, why second guess yourself? If you know that this person is not worthy for you to go, it doesn't mean they're not worthy, but they're not worthy to go in business with you. Why would you even go through that? You know, because that's another thing. Like, oh, well, you know, if I have to sue them, then I will. No, you probably won't, because that's expensive. Like you said, you're going to have to get an attorney. I mean, you definitely don't want to represent yourself. You're going to go through a headache. Right. I mean, you're missing out on so many opportunities, so much money. You don't want to have to go through that. And you were talking before about the man being able to refer me. And it's funny because earlier on, he was saying to me like, oh, here, go see if you can get work over here. See, he thought I was like some meager thing that needed, you know, whatever. He thought a whole lot of things. And so it's funny. I mean, it's funny. But he's like, oh, you know, see if you can work over there, and just always complimenting me on how good the work is and all this other stuff. But, you know, I had that plan initially. I'm like, okay, I don't care how low the pay is, because, well, I mean, I did care, but it didn't matter, that rate of pay, because I was building something. But in that building, I still should have made sure that there was an enforceable contract in place. And sometimes we think, oh, well, if I put a contract in place, will that kind of scare them off? Well, if having a contract is going to scare somebody off, you don't want to do business with them. Am I correct?
I mean, you took the words right out of my mouth. It's nothing personal. It's strictly business. It's not personal. It's strictly business. If someone doesn't understand that, if someone's not willing to put what they agreed to in writing, you got to start asking yourself, why don't they want to be held accountable?
And I want to screw you over.
Right. And so, like, why are you worried about being held accountable? And something that I said earlier about, you know, your contract only being as good as the person you enter into with, that doesn't mean that your contracts aren't enforceable. Mm-hmm. Okay? Your contracts are enforceable, but you just, if you enter into an agreement knowing that you're going to have to pay to enforce it, like, why do that?
Right.
Like,
right,
why
right,
even
right.
put yourself through that versus going into someone and with someone that you trust, and you have this agreement that keeps y'all both in. It keeps you both on track, but it also holds you both accountable, and it lets you know what the person expects from you. So if there's ever any question, you can refer back to the agreement.
Right, right.
And so it's not a bad thing. It's not a bad thing at all. It's like when you order a chair from IKEA, right? And you got to put this whole thing together. If it came with no instructions, you'd be mad, wouldn't you? If you you want the instructions to see what it is you're supposed to be doing, mm-hmm, and that's what that contract is.
Mm-hmm,
I got a question.
Hey.
Mm-hmm. How you doing, sister?
Well, brother Robert on there, sister Laconia,
hey,
brother Robert.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So, now I'm in the real estate business, I want you to touch on the difference in the legality of residential and commercial real estate. And the reason why I'm asking that question, I'm in a situation where I'm allowing this guy to stay for a little time in a commercial environment, but this guy really feels as though he has leg to stand on. Now, I did not enter into this relationship initially with a contract. We did have a verbal agreement, okay? We did it the old-fashioned way, which we shouldn't have, but I did. Now, so the track record has been for the last 2 years, monthly payments of $600 a month on a commercial piece of property. Now, all of a sudden, this guy says to me, hey, I know what you paid for this building. I'm not paying you no more, and we're going to have to renegotiate. And I said, it don't matter what I paid for the building, and we don't have to renegotiate a damn thing. Now, right. So the new contract that I offered him, and he took it to his quote unquote attorney or son, whoever it was, and they agreed to it. I was going to sell him 6 units.
Wait, hold on. Let me interrupt you real quick. Okay, so what he's talking about right now is before the guy just decided he's not going to pay. So they had been going along with the handshake situation, and then me, like, you need to get a contract. He finally got the contract, and this guy took it to whoever it was that he needed to have look over it, signed it, and now has decided, hey, I know what you paid for this building. You're ripping me off. So that's where he is right now.
Right. So I'm really laughing about the situation, because I've dealt only with commercial property the whole almost 20 years that I've been in real estate. And I evicted one person out of the building. And the judge, when we went in front of the judge, this is what the judge says. Okay, why aren't you paying your rent? And she came up with whatever story she came up with. She said, that's not a good enough reason for you not to be paying your rent. You need to either have that money in escrow, or you should be paying the rent. And she wound up evicting the girl because it was stupid. Well, she same type of stuff. She felt like I was getting over because I'm charging what I'm charging. So for a lot of people that's listening, a lot of people, when they deal with residential property, I tell them all the time, this ain't residential property, and the process of getting you out of here is a whole lot less complicated than it is with residential property. Can you speak to that in reference to the situation that I just described, as well as the comparison of the two?
Right. And the challenge for me speaking is we're in different states, and different mm-hmm. states treat it differently.
That's
so
true.
even on the commercial side here in Alabama, we still have notices and things that you have to go through. But the bottom
right.
line is, if you have a contract, you have a contract. And even if you feel like the contract that the person is charging you too much rent, that's not an excuse or a reason for you not to abide by the contract. You should not have signed it.
Right.
And
you don't get to say
like,
that.
that's really the bottom line of it. So residential or commercial, if you have a contract, you have a contract.
Right. And see, here in St. Louis, you know, a lot of times, well, when I rent out commercial, it's build a suit. It's never I'm fixing it up the way you want it to be fixed up, because if I fix it up the way you want it to be fixed up, then I'm going to have that on contract as a contractor. That's a whole nother entity that I'll be working at, in under as a contractor, because that has nothing to do with the property itself. I know how to do the work, so here's my proposal as a contractor to you to get it to where you want it to be. It is not my responsibility as a property owner when it comes to commercial real estate to build
right.
to suit for your needs.
Right, you can, like you said, you can do that, but typically when they do that, it's going to be an additional cost, because the tenant is going to be responsible for the cost of building it to their needs. And when they do it here, I know I'm looking at a property here, and they're charging us, they're making us pay a longer lease, like sign a longer lease, because they are building it to suit our needs, and the next tenant might not want it this way, so they want to make sure that they get their money worth out of it.
Exactly.
That makes sense. So,
yeah, that's exactly how it goes down. And see, I'm a very lenient type of landlord when it comes to dealing with my people. I use the calculator. I give you options: zero down at a higher interest rate on it, or you know, even with leases. I mean, it's at least an option to buy, and I set it up as a. And you can tell me if I'm wrong for this. I do a lease with option to buy. But I was making sure that every dollar that was paid in the lease was going towards the purchase. At the end of the lease agreement, then I would quick deed the property over to that particular person. And so I set it up in the beginning. I said, okay, this is how we'll do this. If you put $0 down, then I'm gonna charge you 6% interest. But if you put $2,000 down, then I'm gonna charge you 3% interest. So of course he took the $0 down, and I calculated it under the 6% interest, and it came out to whatever it is a month. Now,
right.
a lot of people said that's not how that's supposed to be done. Well, I know that since I have a mortgage on that property, I can't sell it create another mortgage and sell it to another entity. So instead of doing that, instead of missing that residual income, I just did a lease with option to buy and did all the numbers as a mortgage, but it put it in a lease form. Now, do you see a problem with that?
So here's the thing. I'm not comfortable giving legal advice on a platform like this. Yeah. So So we want to talk one on one, and then I would really recommend that you speak to a real estate attorney, because that's outside of my realm of genius. One of our taglines is "Operate your realm of genius," basically stay in your lane. we operate in ours. So real estate is outside of my realm of genius. And I wouldn't want to give you any wrong advice. So not only giving advice on the air, but even I would recommend that you schedule a consultation with me, because it is outside of my realm of genius. I would contact someone local, a local real estate attorney, and they would be able to help you with that.
Perfect.
So
okay,
I'm going to deal with you on the Blacks in Business logo. I got to definitely deal with you on that.
So let's cycle back around and get back to our topic at hand, which is contract versus employment. Now, if you have someone, LaKanya, who is listening, and like you said before, maybe they're freaked out, like, oh, Lord, I got these people working like the employees, and this is, you know, not supposed to be that. Where can they actually find out their local, state, and federal rules concerning contract work or employment?
So that's going to be a federal question.
Okay.
As far as employee versus independent contractor. And you can go to the IRS website. Let me see if I can pull it up. If you go to irs.gov and type in independent contractor versus employee, something will come up.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
I'm under business and self-employed, and then it goes to small business and self-employed, and then under that is hiring employees.
Okay. Perfect. You know, and I myself, I had another, actually the first time I've ever heard of this situation, I was in Washington State, because I've been doing house cleaning, I think, since 2008, and I have recently moved to St. Louis and decided I don't want to do homes. I just want to do small commercial businesses, because I just don't have time for that other stuff. So when I was in Washington State starting out, there was a woman who was advertising home cleaning and whatever, and that's the first time I ever heard about the contract work situation. And I used to drive out to her house to get my check. You know, mm-hmm. and she was like an hour and a half away from me. But now that I know what I know, she definitely should have been calling us contractors. We should have been employees. Well, the state caught up with her, and they were charging her like over $50,000 because she was not abiding by the rules. And
she wasn't paying their money.
No, she was miscategorizing everybody, and she was living like a fat cat out there in Snohomish County. And if you look up Snohomish County, you'll see what I mean. But yes, she had this huge house, and I mean, one, I'm driving out there to get my check, and it had hours on it and all this other stuff, and I was being told how I needed to operate this, that, and the other, and I'm thinking that I'm a contract person. You know, I mm-hmm. totally thought I was, you know, but when I got wind of what was going on with her in the state, that's where I was like, oh, wow, okay, there's a difference. Because when I was operating my childcare, those people definitely were my employees, you know, and I totally mm-hmm. just gave them a salary every month. I didn't have a problem with that.
But when it was when I, you know, did some other things, that's when I first learned about this. And it is so serious, people. I mean, you totally have to understand what it is that you're doing when you're in business. And that's why you need to make sure that you hire LaKanya so she can give you consultation. If you are not in the same state as her, she can still refer you. She can still give you guidance as far as how you should be moving. If she can't help you herself, she will definitely recommend the way for you to go. But I'm pretty sure if you're in business, there's something she can help you out with. So absolutely. As the show comes to an end, I want to make sure that people know how to reach out to you. So remind them, LaKanya, how they can reach out to you.
They can reach us on our website, which is iProtectBrands.com, or they can give us a call at 334-523-0022. We are very social. You can look us up on Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, YouTube under Protect Your Mark. So all those sites / Protect Your Mark. Or if you're on Facebook, just the name of the business, which is OffTheMarkIPSolutions.com. And we would love, love, love to hear from you, learn more about your business, and to see how we can assist you. Hello?
Oh, can you hear us?
I can now.
Oh, okay. I heard you say assist you. Yeah, you cut out a little bit.
Oh, yeah, we love to learn how we can assist you in your business and help you grow.
Okay, that is definitely something that we want to help our listeners do. If you are a person who is thinking about becoming an entrepreneur, please listen to our previous shows. Tune in every Thursday at 7 p.m. Central Standard Time, where we are here with two tremendous guests, just like we have today. We want to thank you for Jance coming on and also for LaKanya coming on. If you all want to reach out to them, definitely listen to the show again. It is podcasted. You can go to BIB Radio. You can Google us and you can hear the show. You can go to our BIB Facebook page. The show will be posted there. And feel free to listen to all the wonderful programming on blacktalkradionetwork.com, as well as support blacktalkmediaproject.org. We just want to thank all of our guests again, and we will join you, or you can join us next week for the same wonderful programming. Thank you all, and we will talk to you again later. Good night.